If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, and welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hey, Tay, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Beautiful, albeit cold day up here in New York City.
Well, I guess at least it's not snowing like yesterday, huh?
Yeah, yesterday was disgusting. I did not leave the house. Do you have anything good to drink this week?
Well, yes, it was some of my old standbys, but it was a good moment, too, because... I've had really enjoyed those paper planes since we've had those episodes. And so I'd told Riley how good they were. And so Riley was home for spring break. And I said, and she said, well, will you make me one of those drinks you were telling me about? And so I made her one and she loved it. And even though she had made some espresso so that we could do some espresso martinis, she said, is there enough for me to have another of those paper planes? I said, yeah. So she ended up sticking with those all night, and I drank the espresso martinis.
That's good.
Now, I did.
You're going to have to get yourself another bottle of Nonino.
I know. We're about out. That's what was limiting us, is that we were running out of that. I had everything else, but we're running out of that. And I looked at the liquor store that I had to go pick up a couple of other things, and I looked, and they didn't have it at the one. But that was a smaller one. I got to go out to that bigger one out by Grandpa Dan's. Maybe they've got it. But she really enjoyed that. She said that she doesn't normally like bourbon drinks, but she couldn't even tell there was bourbon in this. Yeah. And she was amazed that there were 3 different kinds of liquor in there, and it didn't taste like liquor at all. She said, and it's so light and refreshing and citrusy. So she really liked it. So I got a convert to the paper plane, and she was interested, why do they call it that? And I was able to tell her the history of how that came about.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm predicting that paper planes are going to have be a popular drink this summer. I think there's going to be a little resurgence of paper planes.
You think paper planes are going to take off, huh?
I think so. I think paper planes are going to take off. I'm back behind the bar now 5 days a week, and I've had so many people order them from me recently. Now, unfortunately, the bar I'm working at now does not currently stock Nonino, so there's like a different Amaro that we sub in that's similar but not the same. It doesn't really make a paper plane. It's something else. But people seem happy enough with it. But I'm trying to bug the powers that be to get us a bottle of Nonino, because I think it's going to be something that you want to have here in a month or two.
Well, as far as being an amateur bartender that I am, I'm not a professional like you, but... one of the things I like about it is it's so easy to remember because it's all equal parts.
Yeah.
So you just 4 things, you know, there's 4 things and you put the same amount in. So even if you wanted to make a little bit bigger, just as long as you did the same amount of everything, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love drinks that are built that way. Anytime I'm designing cocktails, whenever I have like the flavors that I want to put in there, I always start with a 1-1-1-1 build. Like maybe it'll work. who knows? If it works, it's great. And usually it doesn't, because it's a hard thing to get right. But, oh, man, when it does, it's, like, amazing.
Yeah, because that one does.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's easy to batch. It's easy to build.
It's easy to remember. That's my problem, is remembering. Let's see, was the two this one, or was a half this one? I don't know. But with this, I know they're all the same.
Same. I just had to shove, like, 20 new cocktails in my head for this new job, and I just... Like, I know my specs, but I'm still going through the period of time where I'm like, is it half or is it a quarter? Let's go with half. Half, yeah. that looks good.
Well, how about you? Did you come across anything interesting?
Yeah, you know, actually, I don't really talk about it in this episode much, but when I was doing my research for this episode, today we're talking about orange bitters, which we'll get there. Some of the cocktails that were mentioned that have orange bitters in them, there was one that I had not ever tried before. It was a drink called a Revolver.
Mm-hmm. I saw that, but I don't know what that is.
You might like it. It's classically, it's bourbon, coffee liqueur, and orange bitters.
Huh.
So sort of a Manhattan where you're using a coffee liqueur instead of vermouth. It's a little sweet, but it's a nice blend of flavors. It's a really good drink. I made one as is, and then did a mezcal variant on it for my own purposes. But that was fun. It's been a while since there's been something that's crossed my path that like excited me.
Yeah, I'll have to try that. That sounds like something I might like, because I like the coffee liqueurs.
I think you would like it. It's good. It's, you know, it's a stirred drink. It's strong. It's boozy, but the coffee liqueur gives it a nice sweetness, and you know, orange and coffee just. Now, orange juice and coffee don't go together, but orange and coffee go together.
Yeah, orange flavoring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But speaking of orange, let's talk about orange bitters.
Orange, you glad I didn't say banana?
Well, there's no banana bitters.
There's 99 bananas.
Yeah, that's not a bitter, though.
That's a whole thing.
That's a whole thing. We did that thing.
I know.
The orange bitters, I mean, you know, we talked about the other, there's sort of the holy trinity when it comes to bar bitters. I mean, because obviously, especially nowadays, there are a million brands of bitters and different bitters. And, you know, by and large, when we build cocktails behind the bar, we try to stick to things that can be replicated and things that are readily available. And that really all classic cocktails, too, generally circle around these three types of bitters. Angostura, which, of course, we've talked about immensely. Peychaud's, which we talked about. I think that was last year. We did an episode on that. Of course, there's New Orleans bitters. And then orange bitters.
Mm-hmm.
It's the holy trinity of bar bitters.
Yeah, and I didn't know about any of them before I started in this podcast with you. I saw those little bottles sitting in the shelf, and I don't know whether Mom had bought them or you had brought them or what. But I would have had no idea how those fit in a drink or what you use them for, or that they even make a difference when you just put a splash or something in, you know?
Yeah. That's what I think people forget, or it's easy to not really think about, like, the how much bartending is kind of, I don't want to say a game of inches. It's like a game of milliliters. It's tiny, tiny changes can make big differences. When you're dealing with 3, you know, ounce volume all told, A few dashes here this way or that way can make a big difference.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, why orange bitters have their own place both in cocktail history and in modern usage. Now, the exact origins, first I should say, what are orange bitters? It seems pretty self-explanatory, but...
Orange bitters.
Yeah.
Bitters that are orange.
Their main flavor is from bitter oranges, usually Seville or West Indies oranges, often the same oranges you use for Curacao, and then they also have a pretty consistent spice profile along with them that usually centers on cinnamon, ginger, cloves, caraway, or coriander, and of course gingin root, just standard in most bitters. But what measurements those spices are in very much vary from orange bitter brand to orange bitter, so that's really where you find the big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the origin of orange bitters is kind of hard to pin down, because like so much booze, they started out in the pharmacies and in medicinal uses, not in the bars. They start popping up in like pharmaceutical texts around the mid-1800s. We don't see them in print in reference to the bar until like the 1860s, when, of course, famed barman Jerry Thomas includes them in his 1862 publication, How to Mix Drinks, so as a cocktail ingredient.
It's a good thing that he was famed and wrote all this stuff down, or we wouldn't know all this stuff.
That literally is what he's known for. He's the first bartender to write things down. That was it. That's what he did. That's how he got famous.
He was.
I won't get you that far these days.
He was the Rain Man of cocktails.
He just took the time to write them down.
Instead of a serious injury list, he kept a serious cocktail list.
They show up in his book. They pop up in a lot of pre-prohibition cocktails, the Bijou, the Bronx. Maybe most famously in this time period, they were in the original dry martini, which is not, when I say dry martini, you probably think a martini that is mainly just gin or vodka and a little wisp of vermouth.
Mm-hmm.
But that was not what the original dry martini was. A dry martini meant a martini made with dry vermouth, because the original martini, original old school, original martini, was sweet vermouth and Old Tom gin. And it also had bitters. It was a very different thing altogether.
Huh.
Also sometimes maraschino, sometimes curacao. A lot of overlapping with, you know, when we talked about the tuxedo cocktail.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's a lot of overlap there, where original forms of the martini also look like what would later be called something else. So, but that the first printed dry martini recipe is like in the early 1900s. And that one specifically calls for orange bitters along with dry vermouth, gin, and an olive. And honestly, it's a 50-50 martini in that book. So equal parts gin and vermouth. That's my favorite martini.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Equal parts gin, dry vermouth, and orange bitters.
Yeah. I don't really care that much for a martini, but I like it better when it is balanced that way.
I mean, look, there's nothing wrong. If you want an excuse to just drink a chilled glass of gin or vodka, I'm not going to stop you. To me, that's always like, is that a cocktail? Is it? I know I just made the argument that cocktails are a game of inches. So like, yeah, I guess it's a cocktail, but
you just wave the vermouth by your glass of gin and say, there you go, it's a martini. I dub thee a martini.
Whisper the word vermouth delicately in the glass. Yeah, but that's one of the most common uses of it pre-prohibition. And you know, they stuck around during prohibition. It really wasn't until just, you know, all the same things that led to the downfall of American bartending in the 40s to the 50s to the 60s, all those things that affected every other element of bartending. Surely you can see how something as specific as orange bitters didn't really weather that storm.
Yeah, so, it all but disappeared at that point.
Yeah, they were almost entirely out of production, except for one. There was one small, and you know, I started to talk about them for this episode, but there's so much. They've got such an interesting story. I'd rather just circle back and devote a whole episode to them. But Fee Brothers bitters, which you've probably seen. Have you ever seen Fee Brothers?
I don't think I have. I've seen a couple of the other ones, but I haven't seen Fee Brothers that I can recall.
You probably would remember them, because it's a very distinctive bottle. It's a very old fashioned looking bottle. It's wrapped in paper. So their story, I mean, their origins are way back in like the 1800s, you know, when their family came over. I think they were Irish, maybe, in origin, but they were just quietly trucking along, making their products before Prohibition, during Prohibition, after. So they were the one people in America making orange bitters, like in the 90s, when those early days of the cocktail renaissance were happening, and people started hunting down these unique ingredients. And there was Fee Brothers like, yep, we've been doing orange bitters this whole time.
So they had the market cornered at that point. Yeah. And became very much in demand.
Well, they're just this little company, though, up in Rochester. I mean, now they've exploded. You can buy Fee Brothers on Amazon. But at the time, they were a pretty small operation. So, you know, you get these stories of people calling, like, one of the Fees on the phone. You know, can I get a bottle of bitters? It's like, okay. But one thing about Fee Brothers, and I've used them in a lot of cocktails, I like their bitters a lot, and so this is not like a read on them. They are just, they aren't bitter bitters. They're rather sweet.
They're sweet. They're not really bitter, and they're the sweetest of all the orange bitters.
Yeah, they're very like they're very pleasant. You could drink them straight. Absolutely, they lack the bitter part of the whole bitter thing, which just isn't a bad thing. They're great additives in drinks. It's just a lot of bartenders, you know, they came across the fees and they were like, "This, I don't think this is what we're looking for. I think that we got to do this ourselves."
Yeah, and then others have said that they work good when you use them with other bitter, more bitter orange bitters.
Yeah, yeah. Which you know that so you've got these early cocktail Renaissance barmen seeking out these ingredients, trying to you know remake these old cocktails, and this is where enters to the story one of the most esteemed barmen of our modern era, and that is Gary Regan. Gary Regan's going to play a big role in the history of orange bitters. So a little bit about him. He was a bartender's bartender. He was born to a pub owning family in England. He moved to New York in his 20s. This was, you know, the 70s and 80s. So he was bartending through, you know, like the sort of punk rock and roll era of the city. And he was a very colorful character. You know, he was known for he wore wild eye makeup, and he kind of had this rock and roll flair to his style. And he was not like where a lot of these dudes that were the pioneers of the cocktail Renaissance were these people that came from these like high end cocktail bars, these, you know, hotel bars that were very fancy situations. So Gary Regan was not that. He worked in pubs. He worked in bars. You know, and as smart of a bartender as he was and as talented as he was, he kind of always had this self-awareness, you know, mm-hmm. of like, let's not get carried away here, folks.
They're just
the bartenders
drinks.
First. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, like he was just as much interested in the well-being of bartenders as a like lucrative career, you know, like how you take care of yourself while working in this job, along with caring about the drinks, which I think is really cool. Like that he's, mm-hmm. even today, that's a unique find in the industry. But I feel like everything that you kind of need to know about him is maybe best represented by a piece of barware out there. There's a stirring spoon, not really a spoon, that you can buy from Cocktail Kingdom, which is like the gold standard for barware makers. Mm-hmm. They have a finger-shaped stirring spoon, and it is his finger cast in silver that you can stir with. And it's because he would joke about the best way to stir a Negroni is with your finger, and he would finger stir his Negronis. And again, I think that's just sort of that kind of wink and a nod, and like, let's not take ourselves too seriously here, folks. I'm finger stirring my Negroni.
I don't like a Negroni anyway, but that really, I don't want somebody's big finger in there.
I don't know. I think if I had the opportunity, he is unfortunately no longer with us. But if I had had the opportunity to drink a Gary Regan finger stirred Negroni, I would not have missed that opportunity. But
well, what I thought was unusual is that. He started this push to get the orange bitters, you know, to create his own orange bitters, and that wasn't until the 1990s. So you're talking about the 1990s before this orange bitter started back up to get on the scene. And that, to me, I'm just surprised at how recent that is. I just take for granted, you know, that they've been around a long time.
Yeah, no, it was, well, and I mean, he published his book Joy of Mixology in 2003, and that book is where he laments in the book how hard it is to find proper orange bitters, and he also proposes a recipe because at that point he had started making his own.
Mm-hmm.
And he based his recipe on this much older recipe that appeared in this cocktail writer's book. This guy, Charles Baker Jr., published a book called The Gentleman's Companion in 1946 that included a recipe for orange bitters. So Regan took this recipe, tinkered with it, and those were his bitters. He tried them a few times. The first one that he sort of released was his number 5. That was his fifth try at a recipe.
Mm-hmm.
And those ended up behind some of the most prominent bars in the city in the early 2000s. None other than Dale DeGroff was getting orange bitters from Gary Regan to serve at the Rainbow Room. And he was, you know, famously working there.
Yeah.
So after proving its popularity as far as industry standards go, it was taken up by the Sazerac Company. And now, of course, the Sazerac Company, they are the producers of Peychaud's bitters.
Because you can't have a Sazerac without any Peychauds.
Yeah, there you go. But they also, originally they considered it kind of a gamble. Because again, we're talking like early 2000s and, you know, hey, we've already got Payshots. We've already got a bidder that sells. Are we really going to put another bidder in our portfolio? It's funny now when you just consider the glut of bidders in the market. But they took a chance on it and they released Regan's on a much larger market in an official bottling. But not before they redid the flavor a bit, the formula, because it tested as too drinkable.
Yeah, you could just drink it by itself. You didn't need anything else.
This is such a wild rule to me, like law, that the reason that you can go to your grocery store and buy a bottle of Angostura, despite Angostura being 45% alcohol, like if you were to open up the bottle of Angostura, pop that top off, and pour yourself a shot, that you could get drunk, absolutely. But
you wouldn't enjoy it.
That's it. Somebody tasted it and went, no one would get drunk off of that. I'm like, you met my friends? You know what people will do when they're desperate? So I guess the first formula, somebody tried it and said, nah, I could get wasted off of this. It's too drinkable. So they made it a little less potable so it could be sold alongside Peychaud's.
Yeah.
That was the sixth recipe then.
Yeah, because when he was making them, he was throwing together this recipe, and the first four tries, he didn't like it, and it was the fifth try that he got, and that's why it became Reagan's number five, and then when they reformulated it, then it went to Reagan's number six.
Yeah. But you know, that was really, I mean, that was, what, 2000, so, what, 2003, they published the book a few years later, they got the bidders on the market, so we're still talking very early 2000s, and that was kind of the big, the heavy hitter in the market for a while. Now, later, that was followed by, you know, the more readily available of Fee Brothers Orange Bitters. Bitter Truth entered the marketplace. They're based in Germany, but they make an orange bitter that's pretty well received. Angostura finally came out with an orange bitter,
mm-hmm.
They're fine. I wish they had made it look a little less like their standard Angostura bottle. Because sometimes when they're both sitting next to each other, I grab one and then I make a drink and I'm like, I grabbed the wrong bitter.
Well, now, the only way that I know is by the lids. Because usually the regular Angostura lid is yellow and the orange bitters has an orange lid.
Well, it's got like a little half orange on the label. Like it's got, if you have the bottle faced the right way, it's clearly the orange bitters. But if you turn it around backwards, they look the same.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, you know, there are options out there, and a lot of people have very strong opinions about what the best orange bitter is. They're all different. That's the weird thing, is that, you know, when we talk about, like, Angostura bitters, that's the brand is the recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Peychaud's. There are off-brand versions of Peychaud's bitters, but they're always going to be an off-brand version of Peychaud's.
Right.
Orange bitters is this weird thing where it's like, because there's not a clear winner, there's just a whole bunch that fill a category, but they all are very different recipes.
So find the orange bitters that suits you best.
Well, you were mentioning that some people mix them, and that's something that I was reading about Gary Regan, that he apparently approves of this. Like,
mm-hmm.
Someone let him know, like, hey, bartenders are taking your bitters, and they're cutting them with Fee Brothers bitters, and they're calling them Feegans, and that's the preferred orange bitter. And he was like, oh, that sounds cool.
Hey.
I will never get to meet this man, and I'm sad because just the little bit I've read about him, he sounds cool.
Hey, I just say, hey, as long as I'm in there somewhere, it's okay with me. They're still buying my bottles.
Not supporting two small companies instead of one. That's great.
Yeah, that's
not that
right.
Sazerac's not a small company, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I mean, I guess that's the thing. Try one, if you are. Persnickety about your cocktail ingredients, here's a great reason to just make a whole bunch of, I don't know, a whole bunch of martinis with different orange bitters and see which one you like the best.
Well, and try out the Revolver. I haven't heard of that drink before. I'm going to have to try that one out. That's got everything in it I like, bourbon and coffee liqueur and orange bitters, so that sounds like a good mix.
It's funny. One of the bartenders that started the hunt for orange bitters back in the 90s, the drink he was looking for them for was an old drink called the Satan's Whiskers.
Oh yeah, I saw that, but I didn't know what that was either.
I was curious. It's basically it's a it's like a gin and juice with excess. It's like gin and orange juice and orange bitters and curacao. So just all of the orange things with gin.
Well, that doesn't sound like something I would like.
I mean, it sounds like it maybe could have a cute spot on a brunch menu, but it just was funny to me that was the drink that he's like, this is the drink I have to make. It's gin and orange juice.
Something with all this orange. I love the color orange.
It's funny because when I was I filled in briefly some bar backing shifts. This was a decade ago at Death & Co., renowned bar here in New York. And one of the bartenders there made me a mimosa his way. And he made it with orange juice, orange bitters, orange like curacao, an orange twist, and then, of course, Prosecco. So it was just all of the oranges. But now I'm like, I feel like maybe he knew the Satan whisker.
Yeah.
He knew that drink because he applied that thought process to the mimosa.
And instead he tried to claim it as his own, huh?
I mean, it was good. Like, now I do that when I make mimosas at my house. I throw some orange bitters in there. I don't break out the curacao because then there's just a lot of sweet. But I do throw orange bitters and an orange twist on my mimosa. There's a home bartending hack for you.
You know, everybody likes something. You know, we're all different.
Everybody likes something.
Yeah. Throw it to them against the wall and see what sticks.
That's the ultimate, like, you know, the mimosa, oh gosh, I can't remember what they called it, but the mimosa where it's a single drop of orange juice in a glass of
Prosecco.
Champagne.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is even like the more evolved version of that. Just put some orange bitters in your Prosecco champagne. And call it a day.
Yeah.
There you go. That's right. Mimosa Redux.
Just like you were talking about the glass of chilled vodka or gin and whispering vermouth in there.
Just throw an orange across the room and some champagne. Well, all right. So there you go. There's everything that you need to know about orange bitters.
Yeah, the two that I always saw were the Angostura orange and the Reagan's. Those are the two that I was familiar with when I saw doing my research.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard of Peychaud's, but I don't think I've ever seen Peychaud's orange bitters.
No, I don't. Peychaud's doesn't have orange. The company just
makes they make Reagan's. The Reagan's. Okay, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's a good thing I haven't seen that then.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be hallucinating.
Yeah, you see, that's not. Oh, no. Peychaud's is just Peychaud's. Peychaud's does Peychaud's. But Sazerac owns both of them and produces both of them.
Now that makes me want to have a Sazerac again since we've talked about it so much. I've still got my Peychaud's bitter, so I'm okay to go with that.
Well, there you go. All this time talking about orange bitters, and you're going to go have a Sazerac. Well, all right.
And a revolver.
Yes, try that out. It was good. I like the swap in with mezcal and a little spice was also very good. But that's my palate.
Yeah, you like spicy drinks.
I do.
Mom does too. Yeah.
Spicy, smoky, vegetal, all the flavors people usually are freaked out by. Like, just put them in a glass. I'll drink them.
I thought it was funny when I made that paper plane, too, that Riley said the same thing. Said, I can't believe that something with three alcohols can taste so good and doesn't taste like alcohol. So
that's how all the best drinks are made.
Yeah, it is. It really is. That's something.
Yeah. So there you go. Go out, get yourself whatever your preferred type of orange bitters are, or buy more than one and see what your preferred type of orange bitters are. You should check out Gary Regan has a lot of books. They're all excellent. So, you know, if you're looking for a cool bar book to buy for somebody or for yourself, that's an author to look up. Or, hey, the finger spoon is still available on Cocktail Kingdom. I checked. You can still buy a cast of Gary Regan's finger and stir your Negronis at home with it. So, why not?
Mind if I stick my finger in your drink?
we did that once after, I won't say the bar, but I mean, not that it matters, but... after we passed our health exam, we got an A, and so we celebrated with a round of finger stirred to Cody. All right. Well, hey, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I'm glad to learn the bitter truth.
Thank you all for listening. If you want to find us on the internet, we are NeatBoozeCast on Instagram. We are NeatTheBoozeCast@gmail.com. We have a Patreon if you want to check us out over there, help support the show. And you can go talk about your opinions on Orange Bitters or Finger Stirred Negronis
at Meet the BoozeCast group page on Facebook. We're right there looking for you. Don't be bitter when you come there.
Looking for you. Creepy.
I'm looking out through Facebook, see who's coming.
Dad's watching. Dad's the face in the book.
Face plant book.
Well, hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
me. I didn't know there was so much to know about bitters, and just think they nearly disappeared from the planet.
Almost lost the time. What's that? Don't forget those Fee brothers up there just making them, just chilling out, making their bitters.
And they're just making them, and they're not going anywhere, and they're saying, hey, eventually they're going to come back around, and they're going to buy it. We'll have a whole stockpile. They were right. They played the long game.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.